Ray Cross was just named president of the UW system. An audit yesterday said it had revenues of $5.1 billion in 2013, 75,000 employees, a payroll of $2.9 billion, 26 campuses. Mr. Cross, thanks very much for sitting down with Wisconsin Eye.
Glad to do that, Steve. Happy to.
Thank you very much. What advantages do you think you have of becoming president coming from within the system, sir?
I think some of the issues facing the university at this point, an outsider might have difficulty understanding the background and the history of what may have prompted some of that, and the nuances associated with politics, both a capital P and a lowercase p. Mm-hmm. I think an insider understands that. Now, that doesn't make me a better candidate. I think that gives me an initial advantage.
Have you been watching politics, both capital P and lower P, become more and more the dialogue and the fabric in terms of the system over the last two or three years, sir?
Yes, I'm not sure dialogue and fabric. There's a recent article about, the title of the article is Leadership is a Conversation. And in too many cases, I think we view leaders as people with megaphones and large voices and vocal demands. And the author of that article argued that a conversation, a dialogue, an interaction is much more effective. And I think we're seeing more of that in spite of the polarization that exists in the political arena.
How would you characterize your management style? You've been a manager at different campuses. Are you a visionary? Are you a consensus builder?
I don't think those are mutually exclusive. At least I hope they aren't. I think that most people have visions. When you ask them, what should we do? Most people have an idea. Translating that vision into a shared vision, something that we all can get behind, is important. And I believe that's a process of communicating and how you communicate to develop the idea that you have or others have that modifies your idea and to build consensus about a shared vision is the process of conversation and communications. And I think that's really, really valuable, that interaction. And it's all built on, in one of his books in the mid-80s, Bert Nanus talks about trust as being as demonstrated through predictability. And this character that one has that influences this conversation. And as not necessarily persuasive, but encompassing, and it helps build consensus. That predictability, I know Ray Cross. I don't agree with him, but I know him, and I know why he's saying that or why he's doing that, is such an important part. And you don't gain that trust without being engaged with people on a regular basis. They have to know you. So I think that's often hard to do, and such an important part of translating an idea or a vision into a shared vision and then into action.
You know what strikes me, well, many things strikes me about the challenge that you've just accepted, but let's talk about your stakeholders. Another term might be bosses. How do you rank them? Because the competing stakeholders are students, their parents, legislators, the governor, and, 75,000 employees. So talk to me about your stakeholders.
We all have stakeholders that influence our what we do on a regular basis. It just seems as though I have more of them. And they're all very important. There's no question about that. But the value of public higher education is rooted in the public's perception of higher education. Legislators represent the public's view. The board represents a portion of the public's view, but also reflects on their perspective and how best to manage and lead the organization, influence policy. And faculty are in the middle of the classroom activity, surrounded by support staff, academic staff, and others. They're in the middle of this. How do we best do this? And bringing those different parties together to form a strategy or a consensus about what we should be doing will never be perfect. It's always difficult. The sausage is always being made, and it's not fun to watch it. Mm-hmm. But it is fun to eat it if you build it and do it right.
Let's back up the train. Maybe the first question I should have asked. You grew up on a farm?
Yes.
Where?
In Michigan.
How does a Michigan farm boy end up getting to this new position, sir? Give us a brief overview of your career.
Well, we were small dairy farmers in Michigan, small dairy farm, and I grew up milking cows and cleaning barns. And I once gave a commencement speech that everything I actually needed to know in life I learned on the farm. In some sense, there's symbolism in that. You develop a sense of responsibility, a sense of, hey, the cows do need to be milked, and we will milk them at 6 o'clock every morning and every night. There's one of those consistent predictability pieces. And I was very fortunate. My father has an eighth grade education, and my mother graduated from high school, and my mother just passed away. They still lived on the old home place, and my dad's 95. It's amazing. And I look at that rich heritage. We didn't have much, but we actually had a lot. Those that foundation, that farm family, rural kind of isolated foundation, you get to deform character and principles and values that shape your life, and you don't even realize it until you get much older and say, oh, well, I never even thought about the alternative. That's where those things are deeply rooted. And I went to Vietnam. I served in Vietnam, and that was an exposure for me that as a young, isolated boy, this is pretty amazing. I got to see a different side of the world that I didn't know existed, and worked for some incredibly capable leaders that I still respect today tremendously. Shaped a lot of my thinking. And then, of course, finished college and ended up going back as a part-time faculty. And there's a long story there. It's hilarious.
Teaching what?
Teaching engineering courses, basic engineering courses,
okay.
On a part-time basis. They needed somebody.
Were you the first member in your family to graduate?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. There are four of us, and I have sisters that are twins and a brother, and three of us have PhDs. And how that happened in a little isolated farm home, I have no idea. I ended up getting a full-time position as a faculty member, finishing a PhD, and then taking my first presidency in Minnesota. At a technical college, and then in New York at one of the SUNY State University of New York campuses. Spent almost 13 years there, wonderful experience, and then came here, and I've been here about 3 years.
I understand. Well, let's go back to your goals. Let me ask this question. What does the UW system do best, do you think, sir?
Wow, it does a lot of things well, and so let me try to articulate some of those. Best is not something I can directly answer.
Well, okay.
Yeah. If you look, let me start with research. And research is the backbone of a university. And everybody argues that teaching is, but that's a symbiotic relationship between research and teaching. And it's really important that those are perceived as of equal value. And the University of Wisconsin here at Madison is always in the top 3, 4, 5 in research institutions, always. Mm-hmm. And that has a huge impact economically on our state, on what faculty do in the classroom. It's basic research has a 20 to 30 year, you may not see the results of that for a long time, but it ultimately has a tremendous impact. And a lot of times it leads to nothing, but that's what research is all about. So I think that's an important aspect. Great teaching. If you go anywhere in the world and you talk about the effectiveness of the University of Wisconsin at just about any one of these campuses, it's held in very high esteem. You have a degree from one of our institutions, it's very meaningful. When you add on top of that the system, this is an organization that works together in a way to serve the needs of the state, and you look back at the history of the Wisconsin idea and you say, the system in some ways is the embodiment of the Wisconsin idea. How do we serve the people of this state? And I like to think that the Wisconsin idea is a reciprocal or two-way kind of act. We are not just bringing the resources of the university to the people of the state, to our communities in this state, and to the businesses of this state. We're also bringing those problems and those challenges that they face back to the university. So that reciprocal part, that need to understand those problems so we can engage and share that burden and be a part of serving the state, is a piece I think we need to emphasize in the coming years.
I recently heard a former economic advisor to Governor Doyle say this: the Wisconsin idea is dead. Could you respond to that?
No way.
No way.
If it's dead, we're gonna bring it back to life. Okay. I think that's such an important factor. Other states are trying to emulate it. Other states are trying to find a phrase they can rally around similar to the Wisconsin idea. At a time when others are trying to do what we sort of take for granted, which might be the kind of behavior that led to that comment, I think we need to embrace it and reinvigorate it. And if you think about the challenges facing this state and you say, what are the biggest challenges and how might they be expressed and what role might the university play in engaging, you have to ask yourself, okay, jobs in the economy. Mm-hmm. What can the university do to be more effective in helping businesses grow and businesses get launched? What can we do? We're doing a lot of things, but there are pieces that we can be very effective in that we're currently not into those sections like stage two companies and those small to medium companies. We can do more there in partnership with others. I think we can do more in other ways as well. The issues in Milwaukee or an urban community, there is no reason that the African-American males in Milwaukee are unemployed at rates in excess of 55%. We have to embrace that and say, that's our problem too. We have to own that. Or in rural communities around this state, the challenges those families face, not only in finding jobs, but their children are moving away and they want to find a way to bring them back. What role might we play in enhancing that and serving those communities?
There's a debate, and you're well aware of it. Many of the jobs of the future will need tech degrees and not four-year bachelor's degrees. So you're taking over a UW system, 26 campuses, 13 of them 4 years, 13 2 years plus extension. What are your feelings on the jobs of the future and the questions whether those future workers need a four-year BA or just a two-year tech degree, sir?
Well, as you noticed, Steve, I was the president of a technical college for a while. I believe the marriage of those two experiences would be just perhaps the greatest experience. Some have said that, what we really need is only technical education. Mm-hmm. And others have argued that all we need is a university education. And I think that those two complement one another nicely. Now, let me try to expand on that a bit. I think the short-term needs often capture our attention in society. We need welders, we need manufacturing folks, we need this, and we need them now, so our short-term needs are often most vocalized. And I understand that. I think that's, and I want to support filling those gaps. I most definitely do. I also realize that in the long term, the bachelor's degree is significantly more valuable. When you marry it with technical experience or technical focus, mm-hmm. It's a tremendous experience. What we do know, too, research has shown that degrees in the humanities, which are often viewed in the liberal arts as less valuable economically, mm-hmm. We know that's not true. Over a lifetime, the Chronicle just ran a story just recently about the earnings, the actual earnings of those of people from those degrees over a lifetime is much higher. It's very interesting. But the other part of that is too often I think we defend the liberal arts purely from their utility. Well, it's valuable for a job. You need this. It helps you think critically. It helps you clearly write well. It helps you communicate. You get good computational, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Those are good things. I'm not disputing that. But as Plato argued in the Republic, I think it was book two, he argued that there are things that are useful, but there are things that are good for their own sake. And music and the arts and the things that enhance our lives are good for their own sake. And I embrace that strongly.
When you talk to the governor and lawmakers and the regents, have you been told that state aid to the UW system, don't expect any dramatic increases over the next 4, 5, 6 years, sir?
No, I have not been told that at all. But I am a realist, and I realize that the university is connected to the state. We're a public university. If the state does really well, our ability to secure more funding is more likely. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some sort of correlation there. I would argue that we're part of the answer, and we need to be part of that solution. And I haven't met one legislator who disagrees with that. They just don't know exactly how to fit us into that equation. Because what a lot of people clearly may not understand is that the pressure, the growing demand for Medicare, those kinds of things that come out of Medicaid, comes out of our budget, the state budget, those increases are going up. The areas where they don't have discretion in the budget are consuming those areas where they do.
Yes.
And it's just pinching them. So that's a serious problem, and I understand and appreciate that problem legislators face.
What are the lessons of the recent controversy over the high balances at the UW system? The lessons that you're going to carry forward as an ex-president, sir?
Very open about that. I would be very transparent, be very willing to share. Don't conceal anything. And I don't think there was any intent to conceal anything. They had been presenting annual financial reports just like that for many years. With the growth of the fund balances, though, it became much more important to share it in a way that makes sense. It was buried on page 32 or 33 in the annual financial report, the amount of fund balances, with probably very little explanation, but every person who was a CPA understood it. Okay. So the lesson that I am taking away from that and trying to develop an ethos about within the system is you shouldn't have to be a CPA to understand our finances. We should be able to translate this in the language the average person can understand, and to be open and honest about that. And early in the process, the reality is most of those fund balances are well within, not all of them, but most of them are well within standard practices, 10 to 15% of the previous year's expenditures. We're over that in some areas. But we have very detailed plans on how to spend that, what it's for. But we need to be very open and transparent about it.
In the wake of that, what's your advice to parents who want to send their children, their high school graduates, to UW system colleges, at universities over the next 4 or 5 years beyond the 2-year tuition freeze? What tuition increases are they likely to see beyond the 2-year freeze, Mr. Cross?
I don't know that. I wish I could speak clearly to that, but I can assure parents that we're going to do everything we can to keep this as affordable as possible. Accessibility is a term often used. what kind of accessibility do families and students have? So we locate campuses in areas where we're trying to give people geographical, in some sort of proximity to where they live, to make it easier for them to attend. We need to be just as serious about the affordability side of this, because that's probably the largest barrier to accessibility. I mean, we are a public university. We're going to be vigorous about that. I can't make predictions because I also have to balance the quality side of that, Steve. But there are things we can do other than tuition to help reduce cost. What might that be? If we can reduce the time to complete a degree, right now it takes on average about 9.5 semesters for a student to complete a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. If we could even take a half a semester off that average, one semester off of that average, it'd be a huge, huge savings to the family. So that's one thing, and that may involve, for Wisconsin students, that may involve more concurrent enrollment, dual enrollment in high schools. I think Minnesota has about 28 or 29,000 high school students enrolled in college courses while they're in high school.
How many does Wisconsin have,
Yeah, well, without counting the technical colleges, because they have a large number, I think we're less than 8,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that reduces the cost to a family. The time to degree, complete a degree is important there. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would add about tuition is, in reality, this is an incredible buy compared to other, if you compare the Madison tuition to Michigan or Ohio State, other Big Ten schools, we're near the bottom. And when you compare the comprehensives, which do a marvelous job, I think you'll find that we're incredibly cost effective. It's the overall cost of books, of fees, of residential life, all those things that accompany the tuition that add to cost, and those need to be considered in this factor, in this matter as well.
Another issue debated nationally in higher education circles, affirmative action. What's your feeling on that? Is that a necessary program to empower African Americans, Hispanics?
I go back to, Steve, I used to do a lot of consulting in the auto industry and related industries, and worked as part of a design team. And what creates a good design? Different viewpoints, different perspectives, different cultures, different history. When a team is diverse, ideas flow that you never would have thought of, in a more monolithic sense, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way about higher education and this country. The future of this country is built on diversity. All you have to do is look at demographics. But more than that, if we don't embrace that in the university, we limit our ability as a country to solve a number of the problems that we face. And when I was in New York, our campus, probably somewhere between 15 and 18% of the student body was comprised of people of color. It enriched our campus tremendously. We had kids from New York City playing with and studying with and learning and living with kids from the country. And it was a great experience. And I often said, this is what the future is like. And understanding and appreciating that is important. Now, I'm not going to speak to a specific program. What's the best way to do that? I want to speak to the values that we embrace as a society. And an inclusive excellence is incredibly important to make this happen.
So it's not a numbers issue?
No. It's a values issue.
It's a values issue. I asked you about lessons learned from the budget surplus. Lessons learned from former Chancellor Martin's attempt to have a new governing structure for UW-Madison, sir?
I think that was rooted in flexibilities. Obviously, I opposed that. At the same time, I really embrace that desire on the part of the institutions to not just be treated like another state agency. And to find the balance between being an accountable entity and having the kind of flexibility we need in order to adapt and adjust. We're already difficult entities to change.
Yes.
We're some would argue that this is a big aircraft carrier moving in the water and it takes a long time to turn it. I don't think that's the right metaphor. I think this is a train on the tracks, and we have to build new tracks all the time. It takes longer to move us. At the same time, I think that's part of what we need to be able to do, is be much more flexible and make changes, but be accountable. And I've got a lot of hope for that. Legislators seem to be sympathetic to those things. They just don't quite know how to hold us accountable, and they're groping along with several of our folks. They're grappling with that issue. How do we do that?
Time's slipping away. I just have a few more questions. One of them is challenges facing the UW system. Is one of them the number of faculty and instructors who are either eligible to retire or going to retire across the system over the next 5 years? Would you consider that one of the biggest challenges? And are we going to be able to replace those that are retiring, sir?
That probably is the bigger question. Retaining quality faculty and replacing them, or attracting new ones, that our compensation issues are going to influence some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important part. We have to find ways to effectively compensate our really quality faculty, and to attract and retain them. And that is a challenge, and that's a very high priority with me.
Any other challenges you want to outline?
Yeah.
There are many, but yeah. Just briefly.
Yes, I was going to make a joke. Well, do you have a couple more hours, Steve? But I think the biggest challenge is getting our financial, one of the biggest challenges is getting our financial situation. We have it under control, but we need to be much more clear about it and finding a way to communicate what I would call government accounting practices into something that the public and the legislators can easily understand, so it's not embedded in the information or buried someplace. I think that's a priority. I think another priority is finding ways to create a rational tuition policy. You mentioned that earlier, Steve. What is a rational tuition policy? What's fair, what's reasonable, what's predictable, and how is it developed? And that's a challenge we face. I also think that it's going to be difficult for the university to secure additional funding and support if we don't create value in the eyes of the public. And we're seeing, not necessarily in Wisconsin, but nationwide, we're seeing the perceived value of higher education is starting to decline. And I find that troubling, because it actually should be the other way around.
Are you worried that if leaders in Washington ever cut federal spending to control our $17 trillion deficit, it's going to have a real impact on the research grants to the UW system?
I think that's a factor. I do. I think that should be a concern. I also know that the federal government is looking at focusing research in certain ways, neuroscience, brain science. There's okay. a lot of conversation about focusing additional dollars there. What I'm worried about is that in the vein of that conversation, that concerns me is the moving away from what I call basic research and wanting more applied research, something that immediately has an impact in elsewhere. I think that's important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to supplant applied research with basic research.
Mm-hmm.
But basic research is what triggers all these other things down the road. And it's more like short-term thinking versus long-term thinking. And the university is a long-term entity. And we're living in a funding cycle that is short-term and very volatile right now. And that concerns all of us in the university setting.
I just have two more questions. One of them is the national debate over student debt. Does that have to be addressed nationally, or is there something state leaders and the UW system can do on student debt?
Well, I think it's both. But I also believe that it threatens a lot of things that we often don't think about. And if we're not thinking about that and trying to find ways to reduce that, see that go down, we're pretty naive. When a student graduates, and the average student, I think, in Wisconsin is somewhere around $28,000. It's in that range, which is reasonable compared to some stories you hear about, particularly from some private elite colleges. But if you graduate with that kind of debt, that's like a brand new car that you've purchased and you're trying to pay that off. It limits your ability to buy a house. It limits your ability to engage in the economy in other ways because you're already saddled with a significant debt when you walk out the door. And that's something that I think we need to be much more sensitive about. This impacts our economy.
And then my final question is on technology. The emergence, the experiences with massive open online courses, MOOCs. The UW-Madison started two last semester. Do you see these as a big part of the UW system's future? Have I pronounced them right?
MOOCs?
MOOCs,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Are they going to be a large part of the future?
No, I think that they're... No, I shouldn't say that. I think they are an experiment. And I would like to see the university do more experimental things. Those of us in the academic world have to plan and carefully map out every detail before we start something. And I think sometimes we need to say, hey, that's a pretty good idea. Let's just try it. But let's be honest about its shortcomings. And if it doesn't work, go do something else. That's not in our DNA. We aren't like that. And so the MOOCs represent an experiment in our world that's kind of exciting, and it captured a lot of people's attention when they had 165,000 students enrolled.
Sign up for some of these.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you ask how many completed,
that's
the
exactly
number
right.
is 5, 10, 15%. But excuse me, I interrupted you.
No, you're right. The actual completion is much less.
Right.
But there needs to be some way to validate learning and to create a credential. And that's what the Flex degree is all about. It's a competency-based model. If you know it, and you can prove it, and if you can do it and prove it, then we want to give you college credit for it. That's not as easily accomplished as it was easily said. That is not an easy thing to do. It sounds easy. Well, that we'll just test that. Well, test what and how, and how do you do it in a valid way? And in truth is, we know that in higher education, you learn more than just what's on the test.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many other things that are critically important in higher education. So how do we blend those? And I think the Flex is an effort to look at that. It's also an experiment to look at that in a way that allows us to take advantage of those ideas and maybe find another venue to serve different folks. In the case of Flex, it's adult students.
And maybe one more quick question. One more, if you'll allow me. In 5 years when we have this interview, you'll be a successful UW system president if... Finish that sentence.
What is this, a trick question?
Nope.
Here, Steve?
Yeah. Nope. It's a vision question.
I think there are four or five things, and I'll try to tick them off.
Thank you.
The first is we have a good relationship with the legislature, that it's honest, and they see us as a partner, not only in solving the state's problems, but in serving the future of the state. Some would argue 30% of the jobs in 30 years don't exist today. Are we preparing for that? Are we helping the state make that adjustment? Secondly, we will see an impact in the economy of the state, and that the university will be perceived as having influenced that significantly and played a major role in that. Thirdly, I think we'll see an increase in research, research funds coming to the states, businesses growing out of that research, jobs growing out of that research, and that the University of Wisconsin, all of the campuses in the system, will be perceived as being of higher quality. We'll constantly grow that perception. And I think fourth, in some ways, our funding will reflect that positive attitude. And we will secure not only increased support, but as a result of perceived increased value, but a warm relationship with the public. And I go back to this simple illustration. During the Depression, the university's budget was not cut from the state. Now, there were some faculty who actually voluntarily reduced their salaries, but the funding from the state was not cut. What that says about the perceived value of the university to the state during a significant economic crisis is something that I think we want to rebuild. That perception is really important. We are part of this solution.
Excellent. Ray Cross, congratulations on new UW System presidency, and thanks for taking the time to talk to Wisconsin High.
Pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you.